T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
This election show's going to come on afterwards, so do you have a case for a number one seed here?
You know what? It doesn't bother me. I thought I was a one before. I thought I was a two and I was a one. I think the Big Ten deserves it, whether it be us or Michigan, but I'm cool with wherever we go. I'm just going to enjoy today.
Been a one seed, been a seven seed, got to a Final Four as a seven, got beat the first weekend as a one. I don't know that much about Bradley. I'll know a lot more by the end of tonight. But I'm not going to let anybody talk me into talking about that. If you want the truth, I'm going to enjoy this incredible, incredible win by the players in that locker room. And to be honest with you, every player that ever played here. I think everybody took great solace in this win.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, and that is the voice of Tom Izzo, and you hear him before and after the NCAA selection show, the first time you win the Big Ten, and it doesn't matter where you're going or where you're seated, and the second time, I'm with Duke.
Yeah.
The second
I think he's a little more annoyed, justifiably so.
Yeah. And he doesn't know anything about the Bradley brand, but if you Google it, you'll find out about the Bradley ban, which, of course, is the bigger story for that particular university as they enter into the tournament, the Missouri Valley Conference champion, because they won the tournament, beat Loyola in the semifinal round of that. And, and they, now have, I think the MVC, if I'm not mistaken, has won seven years in a row. They've won the first game in the tournament. Now Bradley, Brian Wardle, has got a focus on trying to beat Michigan State, which
I think
is
the streak
very
ends
big task.
Friday.
I agree with you.
Streak ends Friday. Bradley,
and it doesn't bother me that the streak ends.
No, I don't think it bothers anybody
Bradley
paying attention.
They
banned their beat writer, Dave Reynolds. We had him on the program yesterday from practice.
And then they made nice.
Well, they apologized, and you have to give them credit out of fairness for apologizing.
Do you have to give them credit?
No, okay, credit's the wrong word.
Because
we have to acknowledge the apology.
Well, okay, but
we have to acknowledge
what
the apology.
Drove the apology?
The fact that they stepped in it.
That's exactly right.
And it was a mess of their own making.
They had no other choice
but
to apologize.
But you can't unring a bell.
That's exactly right.
Chris Reynolds and Brian Wardle can try and try and try again, but the damage has been done, and this first NCAA appearance in 13 years for Bradley will be remembered for the news that they made last weekend.
What an unwanted distraction.
Missed opportunity. Anyway.
Well, as we head to the NCAA tournament, Mr. David, you write this morning about John Phillips, who, of course, came to become a meme. He was the Northwestern crying kid, I think is what they
called
him.
Hashtag Northwestern kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love a good story myself. And I read your story this morning. It was very well done. And it's a really fun story. And what a good kid. What a handsome kid, first of all. But I remember a couple weeks ago, I was talking to my kids about the tournament beginning, and I was saying that, gosh, do you remember when Northwestern was in and John Phillips became, and my kids who are teenagers were like, yeah, that was really cool. And I said, cool, really? And they're like, he's a meme now. He's everywhere. That is pretty amazing,
right?
That gave him a level of fame that, as you report this morning,
well,
comes with it a commercial.
There's a price, and Pizza Hut is reintroducing, or they're launching an ad campaign on Thursday during the games about a new product, and they're using the faces of March, and they wanted to use John Phillips' likeness and that image and that image of anguish that 2 years ago in the Northwestern game became this meme, and it was an internet sensation, and everyone saw he was crying, he was in anguish, he was protesting.
Raw emotion. The raw emotion of the NCAA.
CBS showed it 13 times, his face. So Pizza Hut came to the Phillips family about a month ago, and they said, we want to do this as part of an ad campaign. Can we use, you know, John's image? Can we use that clip? And they, Jim and Laura Phillips, Jim's the athletic director at Northwestern, mm-hmm. said, well, they weren't really thrilled about the idea. Who wants to subject their kid to relive what he went through? And as cool as a lot of teenagers may have thought it was, you don't want to put your kid in to the situation sure. of the most vulnerable state. You know, you're going to have that sort of on display again. So they left it up to him. And he thought about it, apparently, and he had an idea. And this is what to me makes it the story. Pizza Hut's going to pay the Phillips family for his services, obviously. You have to do that. It's a commercial. They make a ton of money out of it. They didn't say how much they were going to get paid, but they said it was a nice chunk of change. And they put it in the context of it would pay for a year of tuition at Northwestern, at least.
Wow.
Tuition at Northwestern is $55,000. So we're talking about significant money here for a 14-year-old kid. The 14-year-old kid had the idea he wanted to take that money and donate what he would get from Pizza Hut to charity, because Pizza has a Book It program, they have a Harvest program, and he wanted to take the proceeds and donate it to charity. So that's what he will do. So when you start seeing John Phillips' crying face again, when the commercials go all over the place beginning Thursday, know that he did get paid for that, and that money's going to two good causes. Which is, to me, a remarkable gesture from a teenage kid who has great yep. awareness and really mature. And to me, as much as he has grown physically since the 2 years ago at Salt Lake City, the maturity you see in that gesture is even more impressive.
Yeah, it's a great story, and cool. You do a great job with it.
Thanks.
What do you make of the first four? Again, we talked about this idea of how closely you're going to watch this tournament, how closely you're going to watch these games. I am going to bow out on the second game tonight.
Too late.
Well, I'm going to be watching the Ramblers. Loyola's in the NIT. They're at Creighton. That is where Porter went to college. It should be a fun return for him. And I saw that Marcus Towns, who we talked to a couple weeks ago, he tweeted out, "We'll see you in New York." So they're at least one player on that team is planning on winning this thing or getting to another Final Four, this time in the NIT. And I said this to you before, that's a great – Loyola getting in the NIT, you know, that's great that they have some postseason action. Even it's just the NIT, I get all that, but I'll be watching it with great interest.
I think it's an opportunity for a team like Belmont. You look at yeah. Belmont, who got beat in their conference tournament and has been highly regarded all season mm-hmm. long. They're the kind of team that you look at, like, who's the next Loyola? Well, Belmont could be one of those teams, and what tonight represents is an opportunity to build some momentum. You win a game, you get yep. the nerves out of the way, and then you get into rhythm, and you start playing. You play again on Friday or Thursday, and then maybe you go on a little bit of a mini roll, and you win a couple games, and next thing you know, you're making history.
Belmont is in the Ohio Valley Conference, okay? Mm-hmm. They lost to Murray State. Who's on Murray State?
John Morant.
That's exactly right. So even though they lost to Murray State, they for the first time in 32 years, the Ohio Valley Conference gets an at-large bid. So not only do you get Murray State in the tournament, but you and a chance to see a guy who most people believe, if the Bulls finish fourth in the NBA lottery, as they're, again, you know, you get a chance to move up. Mm-hmm. But if they finish fourth, that could be a player they take, because they might be a point guard short, and he's a point guard. And
will he be there?
I don't know. I don't know where they're going to pick. I mean, if they get Zion, I think you take Zion. But if they're sitting there and that, you know, he just could be, if that's where he's projected to go and they're picking fourth and they need a point guard, maybe that's where he ends up. I'm going to be watching him closely in the tournament. I got a list of guys that I'm going to be watching in the tournament. But
if they don't get Zion Williamson, you could make the argument, and some people would even make the argument if Zion is on the board, that John Morant is a better fit for this Bulls team at this stage of their growth and rebuilding than Zion Williamson. I don't know that I would make that argument, but the point is, John Morant, if he's the next guy on the board. If you're pitching, if you're picking second, and Zion Williamson goes first, he might be a guy you consider.
So Belmont is favored by 3 in that game, David. And Temple, who they're playing, Fran Dunphy is their coach, and he's already announced he's stepping down, and they got his replacement all set, and everything is going to be a nice transition. So it should be interesting to see whether this is his last game at one of the great Philadelphia Five schools. So it should be fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that going on. Local stories that become sort of national curiosities. I think tonight is just fun that the tournament's starting.
That's the
beginning of the best event in sports. And then Thursday, starts for real. And
now the first game is Prairie View against Farley Dickinson. They're 16 seeds. The second game, Temple Belmont, they're 11 seeds. So it's going to be interesting to see. It should be a pretty competitive game. Both games should be competitive, and we'll find out if Belmont is as good as many people believe and deserving of an at-large bid from a smaller conference.
Do you watch True TV any other time during the rest of the year except for
what is it
tonight?
What did we decide was on True
Impractical
TV?
Jokers.
Yeah, Impractical Jokers. I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
It's a good
show.
Have
not seen that.
It
you
is.
Couldn't even remember the name of the title, the show.
No, I've seen it. I swear to God.
Right.
I've seen that, and I've seen what's the other? Isn't the one with the magician? Is that on that same channel? Impractical Jokers is the four guys from New York that are all buddies that you got to ask somebody for direction someplace, and whoever gets someone to help them wins, and the other guy gets humiliated and has to do something humiliating.
Has your Final Four changed at all since yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will not be announcing it because it's going to change yet again,
okay,
Mr. David, before I get to handing this thing in.
I love that. You're studying it, you're getting information,
yes,
you're scratching
exactly.
out
Why
the final.
I went with my gut, and then I went with my brain, and I combined gut and brain, and I feel much better about
You've had a couple extra hours. Have you filled out a women's bracket? Because it broke early. ESPN leaked that.
I have
not. I'm not really going to get much into
that. Let me ask you.
Accidentally?
Do we play, do we have a women's bracket that we play with? Because that might be the one where I go all Catholic schools. Isn't that one strategy?
You try
just
that.
Take all the Catholic schools.
Do you think that
way I get to cheer for my buddy Doug Bruno, who I love, who is a proud graduate of Quigley South, as I am.
And Notre Dame, number one overall seed.
Notre Dame's number one.
I think they're number one
and
overall.
And Chicago's got a regional final, I believe.
Muffet McGraw.
Muffet McGraw is a great coach. I saw her when the score was being inducted into the local Hall of Fame. Mitch up there. She was also up there, gave a very funny speech.
Dustin would like this conspiracy theory. Do you think that ESPN really leaked it accidentally, the brackets yesterday?
Mm.
Because nobody's...
Why steal the thunder from all the...
Everybody's talking about that story today. How many people would be talking about the women's brackets today?
What would be the reason? Yeah. Like, why?
Because we're talking about it.
People are mentioning the women's brackets more often
ESPN
today.
The four-letter network screwed up, supposedly.
Right.
Otherwise, why would you mention it, right?
Exactly.
Interesting. All right. We're going to get to we'll get to Bruce Levine. We'll bring in the Scores baseball expert. We'll talk a little baseball, both sides of town next. Mullion Hall on the Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, and we've got some fun stuff going on in the baseball world here in Chicago. Is it fun to have an opening day starter for the White Sox? We know that Carlos Rodon will have that role. I thought it was curious that on the day that Dane Dunning has his surgery, the real news of the day is, Carlos Rodon is going to be
pitching.
I think
the Sox are trying to control the message a little bit.
I would hope
maybe.
So. I think they ought
because
to.
Because it's not a big surprise.
No, it's not anybody else, really. And you know what else isn't a surprise? That Dane Dunning needed to get a Tommy John surgery. Because I think last year when this first popped up, I think we felt, oh, boy, that's headed to Tommy John. That does not sound good. And then, of course, you end up getting into this thing where he has a setback again this season, and it almost just confirms it when you hear he's going to go speak to a Dr. James Andrews. You don't go there so Dr. Andrews can tell you, well, you know what?
No.
You don't need any surgery.
I'm glad you made the trip all the way out here so I could tell you you're going to be fine.
You're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. Your arm's made of rubber. Just go ahead.
Can I see your insurance card?
Yeah, there you go.
You can leave on the way out. Cubs-wise, yesterday, Brandon Morrow took a significant step. I guess maybe I'm saying significant, maybe it's not, but a milestone, let's call it that,
yes,
to 20 pitches off the mound. That's progress.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to say it's a significant step because, again, all this means is that the throwing program that they had thought through and created for him is being followed. Now, obviously, there are many more milestones, including probably an extra 2 weeks at camp after everyone leaves. But the fact is that this is a significant step forward. He's not just throwing the ball. He's actually on the mound. And he told us that he was already feeling great.
I will acknowledge that and accept that. But let me ask you this. Do you think that he will be ready May 1st? And if he is, do you think that he'll still be pitching August 1st? Because I'm skeptical.
Well, he's 34 years old.
That's why.
Yeah.
And last year...
And his career has been filled with these moments of sort of... I don't want to say
injuries have been
gracious,
an issue.
But he's had these like really good, high-value moments followed by good moments, followed by injury. It's been
and that's the trap.
Up and down
thing. And maybe I'm checking myself because last year I believed. I thought this guy coming over from the Dodgers.
Yes.
He had such a strong first half. I think we talked about I thought he was as valuable to the Cubs as anybody on the team when he was healthy in the first half of the season. And then he never returned.
Then he was overused.
In June.
That is what the belief is of management.
Didn't you
sense that?
Sense it. I think they basically put it on a platter for us to digest. That was definitely cause effect in their minds. It seemed to be the case. Is that
now? Let me ask you.
Would that have happened anyway?
But let me ask you this: what is the sort of theme of this season? Sense of urgency.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you balance sense of urgency with, well, don't use this guy too much. Win every game. We're winning now.
But depth.
Whatever you do, don't use
depth,
him.
Bullpen by committee.
You can only use
him. When Brandon Morrow comes back, he's your number one option, but not your only option.
Not three times in a row.
You can't. Not anymore.
Yeah.
You learn your lesson the hard way.
Let's get out to the Scores baseball expert. Bruce Levine joins us. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. Heard the discussion. We're talking Cubs bullpen.
Well, we were talking about the idea that that Brandon Morrow getting on the mound is significant in that his stated return is this is the throwing program and he's taken a step, so we're moving forward. And then we started talking about how you use him as the year goes on and the sort of issues that you have and just this balance of protecting him and making sure you don't overuse him and you don't burn him out before you get to where you need to go, while you're also supposed to win every game. It just seems like there is a dichotomy between those two thoughts.
Here's the deal. It was perceived last year when he was used three times by Joe Maddon in a row that it was a situation where this will never happen again. So he's only going to be used twice in a row once he comes back. That means you're going to have another guy to step in and be the closer. Who's that going to be?
I think Pedro Strop by design, more than likely.
And he threw yesterday too, Bruce.
He's a guy, but he has his own injury concerns. So maybe it's not on the roster. Maybe the answer's not on the roster yet, Bruce. Everybody wants to maybe suggest that, even though it's probably not realistic.
Yeah, and you know what? The tough part for the Cubs, guys, is that at this time of year, everybody's looking for bullpen help. Mm-hmm. They're all looking for closer. There's four or five teams out there that really haven't named their closer. So the back end is a question mark for a lot of people here. Now, the good news is that the Cubs and a lot of teams have a lot of choices of guys that throw in the high 90s that also have experience. You know, you have the C-Shecks, you have the Kinslers. You have people like that who have been there and done it and won't be afraid to go out there and get you a save. But are any of these guys, in your mind, the closer on a championship team in September or October?
No, that's always been the issue that I think I've been consistent with throughout spring training.
But here's the problem I have. I'm a White Sox fan, and I watched 2005, and I saw you know, Shingo start out as the closer, Dustin Hermanson become a closer. Wow, thank God he's there. And then big, bad Bobby Jenks.
But, Mully, did you start 2005 thinking you were going to win the World Series if you're a White Sox fan?
Well, I didn't
planning.
I didn't start out thinking that Bobby Jenks was going to be the closer.
Okay.
And I'm just saying.
Fair enough.
Somehow you can find a guy. Maybe, hey, this is a really stupid idea because I don't think it would ever happen. Who knows? Maybe Tyler Chatwood ends up as the closer by the end of the year.
You know, it's not the dumbest thing in the world, honestly, because I've thought about it. Other people have talked about it because of the fact that he does have the high velocity and he has, you know, a great strikeout ratio, doesn't give up a lot of hits. So there would have to be an awful lot of confidence build up for one, A, Joe Maddon, B, Tyler Chatwood, and a lot of good work along the way to be able to get to that point. But, you know, stranger things have happened, as you just laid out, Mully. You know, the three closers for a world championship team, it seemed seamless at the time. You know, it just went from one to the other to the other, and all three did a great job. So it can happen. You know, is Carl Edwards finally going to be the mature guy that steps up with the 97, 98 and the breaking ball to be that guy? There are a lot of moving parts here. And I guess many teams would say, if this is the biggest problem you have from a 95-win team last year, then you're in pretty good shape.
Right. Bruce, I ask this sincerely. John Lester yesterday faced a lineup full of Class A hitters to increase his pitch count. What's the value in that?
Well, you know, the value is that he gets his pitch count up, and that's what you identify. You don't really necessarily – I mean, he didn't throw a lot of fastballs. He worked on his breaking balls and his changeups, and it was a command day, and it was a – arm strength day. And that's what it's all about at the end of the year here. Do we worry about John Lester being able to compete against the best teams in baseball?
No.
No. But so building up the arm strength, okay, being ready to compete opening day, that's the story. Now, Joe Maddon has not named the rest of his starters. You know, we assume, and that's always a dangerous word, we assume that Yu Darvish, who's going today, will be the second pitcher, and Cole Hamels will be the third. But they're holding out, naming who that's going to be. So we'll see how it all shakes out. We do know they have five really good pitchers to offer.
Bruce, we'll let you go. Just quickly on the White Sox, they announced Carlos Rodon. Was that to take away the headline from Dane Dunning's surgery? Is that, I mean, because I don't know what else they would have announced. And how do they line up their five?
We've been asking Renteria, you know, about starting pitching in lineups since the first day of camp. So we finally came across with Rodon. And then, you know, after that, you know, it's got to be Lopez, Giolito, you know. Then
you
have Nova. Yeah. And then, you know, you have Santana. Yeah. You have Covey, and you have Benuelos, who pitched very well yesterday.
I was told Covey's definitely in the bullpen.
Yeah, well, that might be the start of the season, but, you know, we don't know how it's going to work out. The one guy that's a real mystery to me is Giolito. He's really proved nothing down here other than what he did last year at the end of the year, and that is, you know, have really good stuff and not be able to command it all the time.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, guys, have a great day.
Yep, that is Bruce Levine, the Scores baseball expert. We're going to bring in Mike Florio next.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He got game! He got game! He get better and better!
He get
better and better!
He got
game, BB!
He got
game, BB! Pro BB! NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our chance to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram hotline, home of $7,000 off on Jeeps. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Morning, Mike. Doing great. Hey, how are you guys today?
Always a joy to talk to you. And I guess we should start the conversation with the Khalil Mack news. I laughed aloud as I saw that the fine folks at the Sloan Conference at MIT had awarded the Oakland Raiders, the best transaction award because of of the fact that they managed to get themselves get rid of a future Hall of Famer. And I get it. I mean, they love the teardowns and they love draft picks, but you know, I really believe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that that preserved jobs, that the Bears making that trade changed their team, and various people in various positions had to be nervous that they were going to get launched, and instead everybody has a job. The Bears are a contender. They win the division, and they're feeling good about themselves.
Well, and Vic Fangio is a head coach now for the first time in his life because of it, too.
Right.
Here's the thing. The folks who dabble in analytics have constantly been fighting against the perspective that they elevate quantitative over qualitative, that they try to take things that are not susceptible to punching into a calculator and making broad proclamations about how the world works. And just as the entire industry is beginning to gain some better traction, as people understand what it does and what it doesn't do, they pull crap like this that make people say these are a bunch of eggheads that don't know how football works. You don't draft a Hall of Famer to trade him. I don't care what you get for him. Now, if you're talking about a Herschel Walker trade, that's one thing. But ultimately what happened here is the Raiders miscalculated in their negotiations with Khalil Mack, and they thought they could get him to play out the fifth year of his rookie contract before they had to sign him to a new deal. Once it was clear that wasn't going to work, they decided to move on. They got exasperated and they moved on. This wasn't some calculated plan by the Raiders to take one of their assets and flip it into value down the road. This was making chicken salad out of something far fouler than what we usually say the usual ingredient is. So that's what it was. And to give them a plaque for it, I think, is ludicrous.
It is. It's ridiculous. Mike, look at Tyreek Hill's investigation. Some details were disturbing in that report. Where does that stand, and what might he be facing?
Well, he's not been accused of anything yet. It's just an investigation. He could be accused of something. He could ultimately be in criminal jeopardy, and he could ultimately be in jeopardy with the court of Roger Goodell. And given his history, he had the 2014 incident, and he eventually pleaded guilty to assaulting his then-pregnant girlfriend. That history becomes an aggravating factor if discipline is ever imposed against him under the personal conduct policy, even though he was never suspended by the NFL for that incident because it predated him being drafted by the Chiefs in 2016. It still could come back to haunt him as an aggregating factor. The fact that the victim, if there was a victim, if there was a crime, if there was something that violated the personal conduct policy, is a child, is an aggravating factor. I really do think that if this sticks, and it is a huge if, all caps, bold, italics, underlined, everything, 72 size font, right, everything. Mm-hmm. If the Chiefs have to part ways with him, and I think the NFL needs to banish him under the personal conduct policy. And banishment means gone for at least a year, because what will happen is John Dorsey or somebody else will pounce on him if he's available, because everybody gets a second chance. Everybody's entitled to a second chance. And the one point I want to make about this that I think gets lost on a lot of folks, yes, we root for guys to get second chances, but in a closed shop like the NFL where there's only 53 spots per roster, every time you give a guy a second chance, you're taking away the first chance of somebody who never did anything wrong, because he gets bounced off the roster for the guy that you're giving the second chance to.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I wonder what the hell they're thinking in Kansas City having guys like that on the roster.
They're thinking, we want to win a Super Bowl. Yep. I mean, yep, that's the thing. Exactly. How much of your soul are you willing to sell to win a Super Bowl?
Any part of it, apparently. And this is what you get if they end up having lost two players that were a huge part of it, if that's what ends up happening. And you know, frankly, I don't know that there's any way back for this kid. I don't know what I would learn that doesn't disgust me about this situation.
How would Chicago fans react? Because you've got the Matt Nagy connection to Kansas City. He was talking about, you could say, floating a trial balloon about Kareem Hunt before the Browns signed him. What if Tyreek Hill spends a year out? He's paid his debt to society. I'm just being devil's advocate here, although the devil's doing fine on his own. He's paid his debt to society. He's served his time. He's square now with the NFL. Mike Vick came back from dogfighting. You're telling me after a year out, Chicago fans would say, no, we don't want a guy who's a transcendent generational talent.
If he sits out a year, it's because they found him guilty of abusing a child. And if that's the case, then that 72 font you just used for the other headline, that would be a big fat no.
I hope so. Look, I hope so. I was shocked that Michael Vick got back in, but the argument was, oh, it's just dogs, and oh, he's served his time, and You know, that's fine. But again, there's another quarterback out there whose career got short-circuited because they found a roster spot for Michael Vick, and that guy never did anything. And that's the one point that I keep hammering here.
True.
Somebody's going to get screwed out of a chance to develop and grow and possibly become a great player, a great member of the community who has never done anything wrong and will never do anything wrong because of the obsession with chasing what you can get from a guy who is a bad person but a great football player.
Yeah, not in my subdivision. Is that
exactly?
I don't live in a subdivision, but I believe that's the term that you'd use. Mike, let's move on. Blake Bortles is signed now as the backup for the Rams. I can understand it from his standpoint. You get to go and have a quarterback whisperer potentially grow you as a player, and then meanwhile, I get it from their standpoint. This is a guy that's actually been in the playoffs and. If he has to come in and hand off the ball, he's been known to do that.
Well, now he's qualified to go coach Texas Tech for a few years, get fired, and become an NFL head coach, right?
Well played.
So, look, I, Chris Sims and I talked about this on PFT Live today because he has had Blake Bortles ranked among, what, number 70 of all quarterbacks? And we had fun with that with Dave Caldwell, the Jaguars GM last month. He said, I'm just impressed you had the time to break down film on the other 69. But, you know, number 70 puts you even out of the number two rung on every team and into third string territory. And Chris isn't a believer in this. And look, this would be a great chance for Sean McVay to show he can turn the guy around. Chris's thought's always been that Blake Bortles was the big kid, the big athletic kid that they made into a quarterback, even though he wasn't put on earth to throw a football. And that you are limited in what you can ever do with a guy like that.
That sounds a little like Chris Sims.
Yeah, I never said that. You did.
Okay.
Wow.
Mike, speaking of quarterbacks down in Miami, there was a report from a national reporter that Colin Kaepernick was interested in the Dolphins job. They end up signing Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitzmagic goes to Miami. Any truth to that you've heard about Kaepernick's interest and what'd you think about Fitzpatrick?
Oh, I'm sure he'd be interested in any starting job he could get. Look, the fact that the Dolphins didn't even show an ounce of interest in Kaepernick reinforces my reaction and the information I gathered in the aftermath of the settlement of his collusion grievance. Because remember, he's still allowed to play for an NFL team. And in theory, he could still have another collusion grievance. He could say he's being retaliated against now because he filed that collusion grievance, because he got money from the league. The fact that they're still turning away from him and not giving him an opportunity, that reinforces my belief he really didn't get all that much. I know there are people who think he got $60 million, $80 million, $100 million. I don't think he got all that much. And I don't think the NFL is worried about another collusion grievance. And I think they weren't worried ultimately about what was going to happen. It was going to cost them a lot of money to defend the case as it went forward. And there was some risk of losing. But I think they're confident, especially moving forward, that there's nothing that he's going to be able to do that would show collusion. And the fact that that opportunity was there and they didn't even give him the time of day, that tells me that it really is over for Colin Kaepernick. And for Ryan Fitzpatrick, look, 2 years, $11 million, that's a great deal for the Dolphins. The guy played well at times last year, and they need a placeholder. You can't go into the draft with no quarterback and the 13th overall pick. You may as well have a giant sign on your table at the draft in Nashville saying we are taking a quarterback at number 13. At least now it's not as obvious.
Who won free agency? Is there a declared winner? Do you feel one team improved themselves more than anyone else?
No, you know, here's the thing. Everybody who wins free agency ultimately loses when the time comes to win football games. I mean, who has ever used free agency as the thing that put them over the top? The thing with the Cleveland Browns, though, getting Odell Beckham Jr., that was a stunner, even though we kind of thought that something was going to happen with OBJ. For me, and if you're a Steelers, Ravens, or Bengals fan, you hope this isn't the case. It feels like when Reggie White chose the Packers in free agency that it legitimized Green Bay after 20 years of just being lost in the wilderness. And yes, they had Brett Favre and Mike Holmgren, and they were laying the foundation for something. But having Reggie White go there pushed it to a higher level and laid the foundation for what we've seen in the 25 years since then. I feel like that's what this Odell Beckham Jr. thing can be for Cleveland if, number one, they can manage him. If, number two, he doesn't start banging on the door and saying, pay me more money. And if, number three, they ultimately can live up to the very high expectations they now have. Because you get a tough schedule out of the gates. You start off 1-3, people start fighting, arguing. There's a sense that the failure is going to be even worse if it comes at a time when you're expecting them to be a lot better. That's going to make for an interesting chemistry experiment when you have all those personalities in a locker room if they're walking off the field and they lose their fourth out of five games to start the season. But I think that just from excitement, relevance, anticipation standpoint, what the Browns did makes me much more excited about the season than I was.
Mike, down in Dallas, Ezekiel Elliott is now eligible for a new contract after his third NFL season. I know how you advocate the holdout as getting your way for a new contract, and you look around the league and it certainly is effective as a tool to get a new contract. You think that he will hold out at training camp or use that to his advantage?
Well, and here's the one point that I want to make, because the old school get off my lawn football types will say, you signed a contract, you signed a contract, you signed a contract. First of all, it's a contract of adhesion, as the lawyers call it, meaning it's not like you can really negotiate the amounts in this deal. It's based on where you're drafted. You don't get to exert any type of pressure to get more money on the way in. Secondly, there are two contracts that are relevant to the relationship: your contract with your team and the broader contract between all players and all teams, which is the collective bargaining agreement, and the player has rights under that agreement to, quote unquote, violate his own contract. You can hold out. You can apply pressure. You can do things aimed at getting yourself a new deal when you believe you deserve it. And if I'm Ezekiel Elliott, my concern is they're going to chew me up and spit me out like they did with DeMarco Murray. His reward for setting the single season franchise record with 1,845 rushing yards in 2014 was to not be offered a contract and have to go to free agency. So that's what I think teams are inclined to do. They'll get the most out of you as a running back in the first 4 or 5 years of your career. Maybe they'll franchise tag him once. Then it's, oh, we're going to let you hit the open market because we think you're broken down now. That's why he needs to take a stand while he's only got 3 years of wear and tear on his tires.
Mike, you're the best. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and, of course, NBC Sports. You're listening to Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.